This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. The president just completed an embassy to the Middle East, talking artificial intelligence, shaking the hands of al-Shara, and generally appearing to have a very good time with his colleague, Mohammed bin Salman. What does this mean in terms of the 21st century? The contest is between the People's Republic of China and the United States. The contest is about development. The contest is about domination. The Middle East in general has been between two or three worlds, certainly two worlds. China was on the field during the Biden administration, and the U.S. was not much on the field. In fact, President Biden, former President Biden, went out of his way when campaigning to castigate the Saudi regime, the kingdom, because of the allegation at the time that the Crown Prince was responsible for the death of a very famous journalist who worked at the Washington Post. Mr. Biden went out of his way to speak poorly of Mohammed bin Salman, ignoring the strategic value of the Middle East, not just the oil, but the money from the oil. Now the president goes and makes deals, to our understanding, in all directions. Mohammed bin Salman wants AI. He wants chips. He wants nuclear reactors. All of this, what does it mean in terms of the contest in China? I don't know how it's going to come out, Gregory, but we didn't used to show up. Did we just show up? Is that what we're watching?
Well, certainly by the very act of showing up in a virile manner, President Trump swept Chinese influence from the field in the Persian Gulf. That will impact on Iran, too. It'll also impact on Pakistan and the like. But it's certainly in the Arabian Peninsula, you've got the PRC out of the picture. Yeah, look, the regional states will continue to trade with the PRC and sell them oil. They may sort of step back a little from their position of taking yuan in payment for the oil, but maybe not. They can always use whatever currency they can for different trades. But the reality is the U.S. is now seen once again as the guarantor of stability in the region. And that is profound. And then it extends over into the Syrian area where the U.S. and Saudi have basically attempted to restore normalcy with the very fragile government of President al-Shara in Damascus. But it shows that China has given up the field without a fight. And this is also symptomatic of Xi Jinping's effective end of service life. So that's going to be significant. It's also going to play into the Iran question, although the Iranians themselves have been unhappy with Xi Jinping for making big promises of, you know, something like $400 billion in trade and support from China to Iran within 5 years. And of course, none of that has occurred. That hasn't even begun in the last few years. So the Iranians know that they can't depend on Beijing either. The question is now whether and how the U.S. rebuilds its relations with Iran. And they're doing it in such a way as to not make the Saudis nervous, or the UAE, or particularly Bahrain. And that means dealing with the Russians on that, because the Russians are going to be happy with any outcome which allows them to retain access to Iran and through Iran on their big project, which is the north-south transit transport corridor, which basically provides an alternate to the Suez Canal. It allows trade to go up through Iran and into Russia and across to the Baltic and Atlantic. So Russia can get a good deal out of this if the clerics go or if the clerics stay. to the U.S., the clerics need to go if the U.S. is to get any leverage into Central Asia, which is the other thing. And that's against Russia's interest. So it's an incredibly complex series of balancing acts, which is underway right now. But the bottom line in the short term is Iran has lost influence in Syria. It's not likely to regain it. It's lost influence in projecting into Lebanon and into the Red Sea. The U.S. has regained its strength there. You notice that the U.S., having recognized its position, has withdrawn from military engagement against, to a large degree, against the Yemenis, in other words, what the press likes to call the Houthis, and left that to Israel to handle. So the U.S. is backing off and trying to retain a more balanced control of the area. It will now need to deal with Egypt and help Egypt stabilize in the face of Turkish expansionism. It will need to help with Sudan, which is now engaged in increasing violence, even as the resilience forces or the resistance forces are becoming more aggressive but less powerful. All of these things are going to play into this, and the U.S. is back into the great game, in a sense, into the Middle East and up into Central Asia, because Central Asia is the great prize for the U.S. because it stands, those five or six key states in Central Asia stand between Russia and the People's Republic of China. So all of this is interconnected, and the U.S., in the face of this, still can't afford to throw Turkey to the wolves. But they do have to find a way to stabilize it and get rid of Erdogan. Whether Trump has the resources and energy to deal with that at the same time as everything else is going to be the big question.
This handshake between the President of the United States and al-Shara, the so-called President of Syria, who is an al-Qaeda veteran, that handshake took place in front of a smiling Mohammed bin Salman. Did that mean that Turkey has been replaced by Saudi Arabia to dominate the conversation in Syria?
Well, Sharat know that if he is not to be a dispensable and disposable pawn of Erdogan, he has to get some allies somewhere else. This is Sharat's big opportunity to become a conventional leader, not just a guerrilla force or an insurgency force leader. And he is anxious to throw off the yoke of Ankara and Erdogan. So, yes, he's happy to get the support of the Sunnis, bearing in mind that the Sunnis are not an absolute key to Syria, because to control Syria as an empire, which is what it is, you have to be able to placate all of the Fertile Crescent of minorities, including Druze, Kurds, and the like. You have to be able to somehow make them all happy, and the Alawites. So going with the Sunni is going to be a solution, which is Saudi Arabia, means that he also has to find a way to go with the anti-Turkish elements, which included the Alawites and the Kurds and so on. So it's going to depend on how much al-Shara can step up to the plate. And the U.S. is clearly, with Saudi Arabia, prepared to provide big money to back that up. And what we don't know yet is to what degree the Russians will play along in that game, because the Russians also need to control the Turks.
China. Does China have a wedge to put into the Middle East? I know you talked about that $25 billion deal with Iran, which may or may not come to anything. But does it have a presence in Riyadh?
It does, but it's not one which is very persuasive. They've attempted a number of initiatives in the region, including in Turkey, which nominally has been supporting the Turkic people, in Xinjiang province. But they've also, the Turks are also acting very independently in places like Ethiopia and Sudan. And that's not necessarily in Saudi Arabia's interests, nor in the interests of of the UAE. The real wild card here is how much longer we'll see the Qataris continuing to support the Turks. And I think that may be a love affair which is ending as well. So the Chinese have got limited influence in the area. They did do some minor arms sales in the region to the Egyptians and so on recently. But frankly, they're a spent force. And the Turks are the ones which are now the more dynamic. And they're going to have to now contend with an emboldened and empowered Saudi Arabia in the near future.
And the Yemen story, which is a subplot, but Mr. Trump called off the air campaign against Yemen and said that we've made a mutual pact not to attack each other. Does that need to be solved, or is that going to solve itself? Because they were at war with Saudi Arabia before they were at war with Israel.
Well, put it this way, Saudi Arabia was at war with them. And the only reason the Yemenis started to get concerned about Israel was because they figured that this was Saudi Arabia getting its way in the area. And basically the Yemenis would be further and further isolated. The Yemenis represent a philosophical threat to Saudi Arabia because most of the Yemenis are the Hashemites, who were designated by the Prophet as the guardians of the holy cities of Mecca and Medina, which the Saudis have essentially illegally taken over that role as the guardians of those cities. So the Saudis, from a point of view of legitimacy, need to ensure that the Hashemites or the Al-Hashemi are not raised in legitimacy and power. So they've always been at war with the Yemenis, and including going back into the 1950s when they enlisted Egypt to help kill off the Yemeni kingdom, for example. The Saudis have never been game to send troops into North Yemen. They've been firing across the border. They've been doing airstrikes and the like, but yet they haven't been able to go into the country, so they're afraid of it. The question is, how can the United States make peace with the Yemenis without alienating the Saudis? And possibly the U.S. could use its good offices to say, we will guarantee that the Yemenis do not pose a threat to Saudi Arabia. Then you've got the other question is that the United Arab Emirates, which was also fighting Yemen, as was Bahrain, are also kept under control. The UAE, for example, now controls the Yemeni island of Socotra, which is a very big island off the end of the Red Sea. And the UAE, in this objective, is attempting to exert its own control over the Red Sea, Horn of Africa and the like. And that's meant that the UAE and Saudi Arabia, once allies in the war against Yemen, are now antagonistic towards each other in control of the Red Sea region. So you've got this network of frenemies around the region, and that's got a long way to go before it's played out in the Red Sea, particularly with Eritrea being supported by the UAE, Ethiopia supported by Saudi Arabia, and so on. So, and Turkey supporting Somalia. So all of these things are making the situation so complex, and no one's a clear enemy, no one's a clear friend.
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. China's not on the field in the Middle East right now, as I hear it, not noticeably so. Will that continue? They see the card Mr. Trump played. What's their play? We're headed to our favorite moment of the week, the King Charles the Report. King Charles is coming to North America.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait, you mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool, but financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.
Thanks for selling your car to Carvana. Here's your check.
Whoa, when did I get here?
What do you mean?
I swear it was just moments ago that I accepted a great offer from Carvana online. I must have time traveled to the future.
It was just moments ago. We do same day pickup. Here's your check for that great offer.
It is the future.
It's the present and just the convenience of Carvana. Sorry to blow your mind.
It's all good. It happens all the time.
Sell your car the convenient way to
Carvana.
Pickup times may vary and fees may apply.
Hi there, my name is Annie Elise, aka your true crime BFF and host of the podcast Serialously. I have been a true crime enthusiast forever, but I wished somebody would break down the cases for me like a friend, giving all the details and discussing every twist and turn. So I decided to create a podcast that does just that. Serialously with Annie Elise is topping the charts with over 1 million weekly downloads. I do the deep dives in these cases so you don't have to, diving into all the raw details, saying what we're all thinking, and in a conversational way, just like having a conversation with your best friend. So join me and let's talk all things true crime. Serialously with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.